Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe. As always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
I think today will get interesting. I think today will... It sure got a lot of comments when this topic was posted on the blog. And when we start talking about how to overcome the most fiercely defended traditions in the church, I have a good idea that a lot of people are going to say, I need to hear that. I need to listen to that. I am always so grateful. In fact, I was just in a text conversation with William Vanderblumen, and I'm really, really grateful for the partnership we have at Rainer on Leadership. I have heard from, in the last 2 weeks, three different pastors and or churches who are utilizing his service, and they are really, really encouraged by it. It's a great place for churches and other Christian organizations to find the right person for their organization, whether it's pastor or any other level. So thank you, William. Thank you, Vanderblumen Search Group, and thank you for being a sponsor here.
Yeah, for more information about William Vanderblumen and Vanderblumen Search Group, you can visit westaffthechurch.com. One thing, Dr. Rainer, we've made a recent change here on the podcast, and that's the intro music. You requested that a while back. We went through the rights purchasing agreements that we had to go through to get all that done, so we're using that legally.
Yes.
So just want to make sure that's out there. So it's legal music. We Amy Jordan did a lot of work, actually, to get that done. So
go, Amy.
And but that band is ELO, the Electric Light Orchestra, which whom I had never heard of. Well, and then they played the Grammys, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's the people that did Dr. Rainer's theme song.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's the reason they got to the Grammys is because they're now my theme song.
Yeah, exactly.
And they did it. Precisely. I have very few memories of ELO or Electric Light Orchestra because I am a child of what era of music?
The 60s.
60s to the early 70s, for sure. And this was a song that was recorded in 1981. Mm-hmm. What year were you born?
80. So I don't remember this one either.
Your mother may have sang it to you while it rocked you to Hang On Tight to Your Dreams. The song is Hang On Tight. It is a song that I knew little about, and I was listening to it on hippie radio here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I said, boy, I love that song. I'm going to see if we can get the rights to it and put it as our theme song for this. I love the words, love the tune, and, you know, if some of our listeners do not, we truncate it so that you don't have to listen to a lot of it.
But you can get it on iTunes if you're interested in the full thing. So
sure.
All right, so on to today's topic. You mentioned earlier, it's going to be a biggie, how to overcome the most fiercely defended traditions in the church.
I think of all the times that I have people contact me through various means, and I have... blog is one place. Sometimes a good bit of the time now they're commenting on the blog for the podcast and email and particularly social media. And these are some of the issues. And we're going to look at all of them, particularly in the order that we received them, in order of frequency.
Yeah.
And once again, I will say that this was not a scientific poll. This was based on going through information that we have received over the last few years, particularly on the blog. So not scientifically done, but we think anecdotally it's pretty accurate.
And it starts, as always, with worship and music style.
How many times are we going to start with worship and music style as an issue? Now, I still want to have this caveat placed in there. Worship and music style is not as divisive as it once was.
Agreed.
I think I wrote on that sometime back. The fights are diminishing in number, but probably not in intensity. It is my opinion, again, this is an opinion, that most of the controversy is taking place because the change is affecting the builder and the older boomer generation, and that's beginning to diminish. What was acceptable today was not acceptable a few years ago. So worship and music style, how do we overcome that controversy? It depends on the context. You've got to know how change receptive your church is. You've got to get buy-in, and you may try this one step at a time. There are very few successful churches. There are some that are trying multiple worship styles for the different worship services. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing those fewer in number.
Yep.
Wrote on that not too long ago. But I would say if you're looking to transition in a worship style, take it incrementally.
Yeah, slowly.
Slowly but surely, and move in whatever direction you feel is most effective for the ministry and the outreach of the church.
Number two, related to it, is the order of worship. in the worship service.
Yeah, when you go to the Ten Commandments in the book of Exodus, chiseled in the stone is, in the Ten Commandments, commandment number 12 or 13. And chiseled in that is, thou shalt not change any items in the order of worship. Now, I've got a story, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. I always have stories. I'm going to go back to my first church,
yep.
The Church of Merle,
yep.
In southern Indiana. And they didn't have an order of worship because they just didn't have order in that church. And they were
seven people,
and then my family added to it and got it into double digits. I introduced an order of worship, and I actually brought the bulletin with me. It was a combination newsletter and bulletin. I would print it off. I would copy it. I would type it on a Selectric typewriter. I would then go to a place and get the copies made, and I'd get about 20 copies until we grew all the way up to 60, and I would fold it over, and I would have the order of worship in there, and then I would have a newsletter in there. The newsletter had one of the most original titles that you can imagine.
Church newsletter?
No, it's called From Your Pastor.
Oh, okay.
Really, really original.
That was the original version of TomRainer.com.
You might say that, and if I had put TomRainer.com, they would not have known, and I would not have known. What is a .com back in 1984? So I put an order of worship in, and after about five or six Sundays, I decided to change something. Someone objected to the order of worship I created.
Was it Nellie Joe?
No, it wasn't Nellie Joe. Nellie Joe was in charge of the whole nursery, which was our sons.
Right. That's right, yes.
So she had to stay in another room. But really, why are you changing the order of worship? I don't know why this is so sacrosanct. I don't know why this is chiseled in stone like it is, but it is an issue. And once again, here's one of those cases where you need to say to the church, we're going to try this out.
Yeah.
And just see how it works.
Trial
is always good.
Because it doesn't mean permanent. It means we can always go back.
We can always go back. You have the flexibility. You don't have to eat crow. So absolutely, order of worship, and certainly this would be related to the next one as well.
Yeah, the time of the worship service.
Now, this one, this one came in at number 3 in frequency, but in terms of intensity, is pretty high. I told the story not too long ago of a pastor who was trying to change the 11 o'clock worship to a 10:30 time. It was the only time of worship, of course. The 11 o'clock worship hour comes from our agrarian culture where we waited on the farmers to milk the cows and take care of the farm before they came to made the journey to the church. And it's still pretty much the traditional hour in many churches. All he wanted to do was move it back to 10:30. That way they could get out at 11:30 because the kids were getting hungry and the Methodists were beating the Baptists to the restaurant. And he brought it up at a business meeting, and it failed. It just failed miserably, and as a matter of fact, that pastor ended up leaving the church. Not forced out, but just frustrated out. Times of worship takes a lot of buy-in. You have to go to the leadership, particularly the informal leadership, and give your rationale and have them have ownership in it rather than just you as a pastor or a staff person declaring it. Now, Jonathan, this is your test. Rainer on leadership. Here's your it's an essay exam. You can keep it to 1 to 2 sentences in the essay. Here's your question. What do all three of the first three have in common?
Personal preference. A selfish or inward mentality.
Well, that's pretty good, Jonathan, but wrong. They're all related to the worship service.
Well, I knew that. I thought that was obvious.
That's what I was asking you, Jonathan.
That was the obvious answer. I thought you meant like something like I had to really think here.
Oh, my goodness.
I overthink things.
And it's just they're all related to the worship service, which tells us that the worship service is a key issue that is very difficult to change. Now, why is that? It's because what people see the most.
Well, it's the primary meeting of the church.
It is the
big event.
And if you're going to count on the most people seeing any one thing in the church, it's going to be the worship service. And frankly, that's what many people are used to, the way that they've always done it. And so you better be careful when you change this. So this is these are fiercely defended traditions in the church, and they're all related to the worship service. First three, anyway.
Do you think these are easier maybe to tweak and change, like we said, incrementally, number one, but as a church is growing or incorporating as part of a bigger change, instead of just changing the time of the worship? Well, maybe we're having to add you know, more Sunday school. We need more Sunday school time, or we need to do something. We have something going on in the afternoons. We're going to have a church membership class, and we need to start at noon, so we need to back up everything
right
to 10:30 so we can meet that every month when we have our church membership class.
Sometimes you really surprise me with your insights. And on this particular time, you really surprised me with your insights. John Cotter is probably the most famous writer on change. Mm-hmm. And if you are a leader and you have not read his book, Leading Change, you need to. It's many years old, but it's a key book on change. One of the ways that change is implemented in a church or any organization, one of the ways it is implemented is by creating a sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. That urgency could be we're running out of space for Bible study time that is corresponding with the worship service. We're running out of space in the worship service. We're not reaching sufficient people. The list goes on and on. Changing worship aspects of the worship service for the sake of change is not going to work. You have to create a sense of urgency that if we don't do this, then this is the likely outcome and it's negative.
All right. Number four is the role of the pastor.
Well, a pastor needs to have a couple of spiritual gifts. Every pastor needs to have two spiritual gifts.
Omnipresence and omniscience.
That is exactly right. The pastor needs to be everywhere and the pastor needs to know everything. What didn't you send me a tweet earlier this week about somebody who was not at the hospital?
Yes.
Because the lady was having an infection lanced in her finger.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't.
You said it. Oh, that's not a big deal. People don't care about that. And I said they did.
They did.
And if they do, if you have this, tweet me. And he did. And there you go.
And I think you tweeted me and said there you go, Dr. Uh-huh. Ringer. Look at that particular one. What is the role of the pastor? Some would say the role of pastor is defined pretty clearly in Acts 6, where they give the ministry over to what would eventually become the diaconate, and they say, and we will turn our attention to prayer and the ministry of the word. That, in many churches, is highly theoretical,
mm-hmm.
prayer and the ministry of word. For many pastors, the expectations of being there, being present, being at meetings, being at every type of physical ailment, and the list goes on and on. I have a story about that, but I'm not going to tell it because it would make this particular podcast at least PG-13 rated about an expectation of a lady and a procedure that she was having. So I just... The role of the pastor is something that is a fierce tradition, and it's church by church.
Yeah, but in general, the smaller the church, the higher the expectation for these type of things.
Absolutely.
Rather than the larger the church.
Absolutely, because you know the pastor more personally.
Yeah.
You see the pastor up closely. You probably have interaction with the pastor, and the more interaction you have, the more expectations that you have.
Yeah.
I'm in a church of almost 10,000 members, and just for fun, one time I texted my pastor, Mike Glenn, whom we had not too long mm-hmm. ago, and I said, I'm really mad at you, and just kind of left it at that. And finally, he texted back, why? I said, I just removed a hangnail, and you weren't here for me. And I'll end the text exchange at that point because that's all I wanted to say. But I was joking with him. I was joking with him just simply because the expectation that pastors would be at every meeting, the expectations that they're to have all knowledge. I've heard from many pastors, I've experienced it myself, where you'll get someone who is mad at you because you didn't visit them when they were sick, but the problem was you didn't know they were sick.
Yeah. Well, you're supposed to know these things.
You're supposed to know these things. Wanting it on the prayer list? No, but we have to, the prayer list is not just created ex nihilo, out of nothing.
Hey, I knew what that meant.
The prayer list is people saying what's on the prayer list, and if someone doesn't tell us, we don't know. So, role of the pastor.
Number five, the committee structure.
Many churches have committee-itis. They have too many committees, and they have non-functioning committees. There is a purpose behind committees when they're created, but hear this well. If you have a committee in your church, it should be for an ongoing need. Otherwise, you need a task force. And then as soon as you're done, the task force needs to complete its work. For example, many churches have a personnel committee that is mm-hmm. ongoing. It may be for some of the staff supervision. It may be even for the pastor, but that is ongoing. But there are other types of committees that you get the project done and you close it down. And if you need to do the project again, you can open it back yep. up. So I would say in this, ask the question, is the committee meeting still useful? successful. And one of the ways you know is by what happens when you come to the committee meeting and if anything really gets accomplished or you just talk about the stuff.
So how do you overcome committee structures that need to be done away with?
I would
again, or even tweaked.
I'm sorry?
Or even tweaked.
Yeah. I would get influencers, particularly influencers connected to that committee. Let me just give you an example. I know of a pastor who wondered if the flower committee was really necessary to meet once a month. Hmm. And so the pastor went to the chairperson of the flower committee and said, you know, tell me what y'all's committee does. The pastor had not been coming to the meetings. And they found out that basically what happens is the chairwoman tells the people on the committee what they're going to do with the flowers in the sanctuary. He suggested to her that she may just want to email them and see if they're okay with it. They bought into it. And so there was no longer a need for a committee. You just had some person that was responsible for the flowers. And so now an hour a week, a month committee meeting was done away with. What did that pastor do? He went to the influencer, who happened to be the chairperson of that committee, and said, can we do it this way?
Number six, and you might have to dial this one in a little bit, but it's specific ministries and programs. I guess these are like pet programs, pet ministries for people.
Yeah, it's very similar to the comments
on
committees.
Not like pet ministries, like ministering to dogs, but like...
You know, Marley would probably like that. Marley had been at his boarding place for some time because he'd been out of town and then bad weather hit. He was so glad to see me yesterday.
Took him to Sonic?
No. He asked for Chick-fil-A.
Oh, okay.
So I took him to Chick-fil-A. He said that he had gotten enough beef at the place where he was staying. So I took him to Chick-fil-A. Specific ministries and programs, this is very similar to the committee structure. What I said about the committee structure, our comments together about testing if they're effective or not. The resource that I would recommend, Simple Church. Mm. That Eric Geiger and I wrote, yeah. Where you ask the question, does this really fit in with our vision? If it does not, what do we do about it? If we need to eliminate it, how do we do that without creating chaos? So that would be my resource for that.
Number seven is one that I've seen really, really get involved with controversy in the local church, and that's locations of the church facility.
Yeah, not only does the church facility itself become this type of thing, tradition that cannot change. Also the location. So when you relocate a church, even if it's for very good reasons, very obvious reasons, there are people that are not only attached to the building that you're leaving, they're attached to the location,
yeah,
where you're leaving as well. This is the type of change that takes a lot of time in most churches. Mm-hmm. It's the type of change that takes a lot of ownership. It is certainly not done in a few days or even a few months in most churches. It's the type of change that you must proceed slowly on and get a lot of ownership. I'm going to do a study on this one day because it's anecdotal at this point. But I have noticed that after a relocation, many pastors leave after the relocation is done. I think that they're worn out, not just from the relocation itself, but from all of the opposition that was there to the relocation.
Speaking of this, you've led Lifeway. Now we're kind of in the middle of a relocation project here, hopefully in downtown Nashville. And by the time this airs, maybe there may be more details for that. But
right.
at time of production, not so many. But what have you learned through this, and how has it been similar to churches maybe looking at relocating?
I've had to get a lot of ownership. I've had to get internal ownership, and I've had to get external ownership. Lifeway is a part of a denomination, and I've had to seek out ownership of people who do not have necessarily decision-making authorities at Lifeway. We've also gone through a long process where we've worked hard to get ownership by the employees by having them involved in actually what our next building, yep, will look like, mm-hmm, and therefore the need for the relocation. I've also had to create a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
We're in a million-plus square foot building, and we need a third of that. So I'm saying this is an issue of stewardship. Yep. We can't continue to do things like we've always done them and sustain our ministry for the future. So all of those would apply to a church relocation as well.
And speaking of facilities, number eight is the use of specific rooms or parts of the facility.
Yeah, and it's twofold. One is the use of the room, who can use it and who cannot. And another one is whether the room is changed in any way whatsoever. So, for example, many church leaders have a multi-use building. Mm-hmm. And so it is fully expected that in that building you're going to have different things taking place.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you have a worship center that was built exclusively for a worship center, uh-huh. and then you suggest that something's going to happen there that is not traditionally connected with a worship experience, it could be that you're going to have a pep rally for the local high school.
Oh.
That was one that came up, and the former pastor told me about that one. Because you don't do that in this
particular. We don't get excited in this room.
keep it calm. So it's both the use of the facility and what it is used for.
Mm.
Many churches have a parlor.
Yes.
The parlor.
Many old churches have parlors.
A parlor can sometimes be used as the wedding room, mm-hmm.
bride's room,
or something to that effect. And often that room is one of the most controlled places. I mean, it stays vacant 98% of the time, but that 2% of the time that's used, it is strictly controlled and usually by just a few people as well.
And don't you dare mess up the furniture in the parlor.
Or move it in any direction whatsoever.
Yeah. Number 9, business meetings in the church.
We have spoken about business meetings.
We had a post on that as well.
Yeah, and it was another lively post. I understand that there are listeners at Rainer on Leadership who come from different traditions and different backgrounds, but many churches do have business meetings. What are the issues that are often resisted? One is the frequency of mm-hmm. the business meeting. Two, what do we cover at a business meeting? Three, what is the scope of authority of those in the business meeting? And the list can go on and on. But because of that, many business meetings will become times of divisiveness rather than times of unity. I would encourage, and we have this at the bottom of this particular podcast on the blog, I would encourage you to go to the post on business meetings and read the comments. There's some great suggestions in there. That's why I love
how to improve them, how to make them better,
terrific.
Yeah, some of them just do away with them, period.
Yeah, but some of them where you cannot, they offer suggestions on how to. So don't just read the post. The listeners of Rainer on Leadership and the readers of TomRainer.com have some sharp, sharp ideas, and the comments sometimes are worth a lot more than the original post or the podcast.
And the final obstacle is staff ministry descriptions.
Yeah, this goes back to how we hire people and what job description they have. For example, in many evangelical churches, traditionally it was a pastor and then a youth minister and then a worship leader and then called a music minister. Yeah. And then you would there would almost be this order in which you hired people. The times have changed and the needs have changed. And I've said in a previous podcast that one of the things I would look for if I were a pastor these days, depending on the demographics, would be a children's minister.
Yes.
Early in the stage, Jonathan's wife is a children's minister. I do not say that for your benefit. But it's true. The demographics are such the most formative age is while they're children, mm-hmm. not when they're students. And so I'm just saying the way that we've always done it may not be the best way to do it in staff ministry descriptions.
And speaking of staff ministry descriptions, we are once again glad to have William Vanderblumen and Vanderblumen Search Group as our sponsor. They are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. That'll do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
I'm thinking of all the things we've covered.
We've covered a lot.
We've covered theme songs. We've covered sponsors. We've covered the Church of Merle again that tends to come back quite frequently. There's been a lot of things here, but it all deals with dealing with change in a healthy and godly type way.
Yeah, it's slow,
most
steady,
of the time,
incrementally, and with great prayer.
There you go.
Thanks for joining us today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at TomRainer.com.